Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Well, all I got is my life being free. Close so I'm up, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to episode 102 of New Shooter Canada. I'm one of your hosts, Thomas Donnelly.
I'm Mike Hiffen.
I'm Mary Patrick.
And how you doing today, Mary?
Pretty good, you?
Good. We got Mary stepping in for us because George is booked off sick. He said he was feeling like a bag of hammers, so we let him off tonight. So I guess I'll start off first with what we did with guns, and then we can lead into Mary. I didn't do anything. We're recording today a day early, and my shooting days are usually Sunday or Monday, so I did invite listener Jason to the range with me tomorrow, but he has entered his car and some car show at Mossport, so he might not be able to come. So I'm going to go to the range tomorrow. And whoever is hosting next year's charity shoot, I'm getting sponsors interest already. If you want my help getting guns and gear, send me a message. That is the limit of my involvement. I don't want to be involved as an organizer this year. I just want to be a listener helping your show because charity shoot is more fun for me as a participant. Besides, it's no more fun when your gun beats the furry face furlot in the mat with somebody else shooting it. But I'm glad that it was Frederick shooting my compensated 22 with a red dot. It would be so bad, filthy, to actually used it in one. Could you imagine the teasing I would take, Mike?
Yeah.
It'd be so bad. So, Mary, it's been a while since we've had you on the show, and you've had a busy summer. Why don't you give our listeners a little update to what matches you had to do in order to obtain your spot on the national junior team.
Okay. Well, it was a pretty busy summer for me. I had been training all the year, basically. So the first of my matches really started in, like, August. So it started the first week of August, and it was the Canadian Smallbore National Championships. Now, this is the biggest match for national team cut score or anything in all of Canada, for like, in terms of shooting. And this is because you have to compete at this match if you want to have any sort of chance at making a national team. So everybody all across Canada, they come to this match and they shoot. So that was a great experience. I shot with my coach there. I was super thrilled. I'm working with my coach. I think this was the second time I had ever worked with him in person.
This is your new coach.
This is my new coach, okay. Yes. And it was great because he's a really great coach. I'm so glad he knows what he's doing. And so we fixed a couple of things before I shot, and then I shot on the first day. I shot my cut score for the national junior team. So basically, the cut score means it's the minimum qualifying score to get onto the team. So you have to hit it or shoot higher than it to make the team. And so I did hit it. Actually, I shot higher than it. And I had also shot higher than it in January in Ohio. So since I had those two qualifying scores, it means I have not only qualified for Team Canada for the national junior team, but it also means I get to travel abroad and compete for Canada on that team. So, woo! So excited! Right now I think I am the second female qualifier. The second or the third, so it means I am the second in line to choose my international competitions. Basically, how it goes is they go from the top qualifier to the bottom qualifier, and they each get to choose their own matches. And so the first picks two, the second picks two, the third picks two, and it goes all the way down. And if they still have more matches left, then the first picks one, the second picks one, the third picks one, and then it just keeps going down until they either run out of matches or people don't want to take the matches anymore.
Is there an advantage of getting first pick of the matches?
I would say yes, because, for example, if it was an Olympic year and you were on the national team, if you were first in line, you qualified, you got your quota spot, you hit that quota spot, like you earned it again in Canada whenever you competed, and you're first in line, it means you get to, like, go to the Olympic Games.
Excellent.
But, I mean, you could always say no and the second person can go, but that's pretty rare, I would think, unless it's, a serious issue.
Yeah, unless the person's dying, they're not going to cancel out an Olympic position.
Yeah, exactly. Cancel out the Olympics.
But, okay, yeah, so what else?
that was the first one, and I was pretty happy with those results. I was using a borrowed rifle, and I had been using the rifle since April. So it was fairly new. Things were still not quite set to me, but we had fixed a lot of the problems, and it was helping me a lot. So I returned that rifle, and I started using my new rifle. Now, I'd still been setting it to me, still been trying to work on getting it kind of close to what I should be shooting with, but it wasn't anywhere near set and weighted like the one I was borrowing was. So it was something completely new. I could, like, throw it accidentally if I went to pick it up. It was way too light. So I went and I competed at the Ontario Summer Games with this rifle, and I placed second individual, and our team placed second as well. But for my personal scores, I didn't hit nearly as high as I'd wanted to. I figured out, actually, not too long ago, only a few weeks ago, that this was because the rifle wasn't, like, it wasn't weighted enough. So there wasn't enough weights on the rifle to actually settle you down whenever you're in the position. It was too light, so all your movements, all your heartbeat movements, they're being projected through the rifle and into your sight picture. So weighing it down actually helps with that, and I just didn't have enough weights.
So how did you weigh it down?
For that, I actually taped Allen keys to the front and back of the rifle. So, yeah, this is redneck target shooting. So, yeah, that's...
Well, it worked.
It for air rifle. And I had a third competition for large bore shooting, which I'm sure most of you guys are more interested in, because who's going to, like, kill a bunny with an air rifle, right?
Matthew.
Well, I mean, there's some special talent out there.
So the big bore stuff's at Cannot?
Yeah.
Okay, how did that go?
It was great because it was an international competition, so there was actually... I got to meet some people from Barbados, and that was awesome. They were such nice people. There were people that came from all over the world. And then we had, like, team matches where people from China came, people from Europe, tons of people from Ireland, England, Scotland. Their accents are so funny. Never get a Scotsman mad. It's the funniest thing ever.
Especially if he's been drinking. Don't do it.
Well, what do you think you're doing there, lad? Don't you dare say something like that around me.
Well, yeah, they don't hold anything back.
Oh, they don't. It's so funny. So I'm going back next year, which leads to the fact that I have qualified for the top 18 shooters in Canada, which means I've qualified for the national adult team to England next year.
Oh, Bisley again.
Bisley again.
Excellent, excellent. Now, this is going to be more challenging for you this time, because last time you went as a junior, this time you're shooting as an adult, you're saying?
Last time I went as a cadet.
Okay.
And so whenever you shoot as a cadet, you start in the basic class, so you're a tyro.
Okay.
And then you get, like, placed accordingly depending on your skill level. Now, because I had, for any of you who know about what happens in Bisley, there's the big event called the Queens, and it's different rounds of the Queens, so there's three stages. The stage one, everybody shoots it. The stage two takes the top 300, and the stage three takes the top 100. And because I made to stage three, they put me in the highest category. So.
Excellent.
It's going to be fun as a master.
Now, was it last year, a female officer in the armed forces win the top spot, but she couldn't get awarded because she wasn't a British soldier? Or was that the year before?
Each service rifle. There was one from Vancouver who won a lot in Bisley, but I didn't hear about that.
Okay. Maybe I had my dates mixed up. So what's
I know that actually happened a lot to us because we had a couple of matches as cadets that we were registered in, but we were only shooting for honors because we were international. So even if we won top spot, they wouldn't give us the award because we were only shooting for honors.
So the cadets are in the same position then.
Yeah. But that wasn't like that. There was the main match, the Imperial meeting. It's everybody shoots, no honors, whatever.
It's still an honor even to do the shoot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, tons of people pay to go as an individual, like separate from the team.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So you can actually go in as pay to go to the match as an individual.
Yeah. I knew a girl from the Northwest Territories who did it this year.
And how'd she do?
I'm not quite sure. She says she did pretty well, so excellent. I'm taking her word for it.
So anything else planned after Bisley?
Basically, after Bisley, like, I've got my training plan going on. So last year, I was sadly starting working out, and I kept with that, and I'm keeping with it again, but this time I have to start dieting, too. So I'm off gluten, and I'm off sugars for the most part. Nasty strep throat, so my coach said I could cheat this week while I recover, and I'm still a little sick.
Yeah. You don't sound very good. I think you should eat some more nuggets.
I could do another 20.
She just ate 19 McNuggets before we recorded. 20? So 20. Oh, you finished the last one. Okay.
Two dips, a little carton of milk, and 20 nuggets, and I don't think I can move.
I don't think I could eat one nugget. They're nasty.
Oh, pizza ones, though.
Okay,
they're those ones. They're different from the McDonald's ones.
I admit, those I haven't had.
Mm. They are so good. But, I mean, yeah, I guess in terms of training, like, I started off with running 1 kilometer, biking 8 kilometers, and rotating sort of like that, and having one break day a week. And I'm going to keep that up and increasing intervals. So that'll be part of my day's training. I'll also be dry firing every day.
So you can include all that stuff in your coaching segment.
Oh, yeah. I will. So, yeah. I basically train like this until November. Okay. November, I start my my practice competitions. Yeah, I use them more for training, see where I'm at. So, because they're kind of smaller ones. They're only provincial matches, so...
Well, especially if it's a fun shoot where you get to blow ammunition away. That's the best kind of
thing. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which brings me to my next point, that I will be shooting next weekend in Kingston. So if any of you want to stop by the military base, we'll be there for a shoot.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
So if you're by, say hey, hello to Mary. Are you going to have that sporty leather jacket that you won?
Oh, yes. While I was shooting the Dominion of Canada Rifle Association, the international football matches this summer, I came as the top under 25 shooter by a point. It was very stiff competition. So the top under 25 shooter, I got a $3,500 grant, which I am putting towards England next year.
Bonus.
And I also won a shooting jacket for full bore, which was great because I was using one jacket for air rifle and full bore, and it was getting really worn out. So this jacket is a full leather jacket, and it's going to be red, black, and white. Like the Canada colors, it's going to have my name on the side and CAN for Canada at the bottom. So once I get that, I'm definitely going to like bomb the internet with pictures.
All right, so people will be able to see a mile away if they go down to Kingston and you're wearing it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. They'll know who I am.
Well, listen,
Patrick on the side.
Listen, thanks for jumping in and helping us be the co-host tonight. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So, Mike...
Yes.
Did you fall asleep on us yet?
Is he still alive over there?
What did you do with guns this week?
Well, I literally just got back from shooting an IDPA match in Selkirk. It was their, I guess it was like their end of season big match. So it was 12 stages long. So that was pretty awesome. I didn't even realize that really till I showed up. I was the only revolver shooter, so I both won and lost my division again. Which is the only kind of upsetting part about it is about three guys came up to me and said, you know, I was going to bring my revolver today, but something told me to bring, you know, their 1911 or whatever else they had. And it's like, I almost had competition.
What was the round count on that match?
I think it was over 100, like 120 or something like that.
Well, excellent. So good match.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was good. It was a lot of fun. I didn't take any big risks. Like, I didn't try and, like, when I shot my match last week with Wes, I tried to game a few stages to get that extra edge.
And yeah, work out.
Most of the time they fail on me. So this week I just tried to keep it basic, and it worked out well. Like, I didn't make any glaring mistakes. You know, I missed a few shots here and there, but know, what can
don't
you do?
Don't even think about what you're doing. Just let it go. Be relaxed. It's all subconscious.
Well, the weirdest part is I think I took a shot at steel. I hit it. I heard it ring. So I moved to the next target, and it was also steel. So I shot it, and it fell down. And I realized the target to the left was still up, so I shot it again. And I asked the guys, and they said, oh, yeah, you hit it. It was actually falling. You just were being too impatient and shot it again to knock it down faster. So just little stuff like that. I mean, it was nothing that would have made or break me for, where I ended up in the standing.
Did it force you to do another reload because you're missing a shot?
No, it was never anything like that. I didn't have to do any extra reloads, so.
Okay.
Well, but it was good. I actually won a gift card at the raffle. And the gift card was for a store that's in Winnipeg, so I decided, well, this is probably going to be my only chance to go to it. So I swung
back out. Back out. How much is the gift card?
$25.
Well, that's still okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. It was worth taking a detour into Winnipeg. Of course, they had everything. They had they have all the tactical clothing, so they had some nice belts and some nice jackets I really wanted, but I just couldn't bring myself to spending that much on that stuff. So I ended up just buying a pair of moldable earplugs, like they're supposed to be nice ones that you heat them up in like a microwave and then you stick them in your ear so that they'll like form to your ear.
Oh yeah, Select Shooting Supplies donated a couple of sets of those for the charity shoot.
Yeah,
one of the prizes. Yeah,
cool. Yeah. I wanted a pair like that just because for cowboy shooting, when I go with Sarah, you're supposed to wear a cowboy hat. Well, when you wear a cowboy hat, you can't wear earmuffs, at least not the ones that go over your head. And I always have a problem with those stupid little ones that you roll up. I can never get them in just right. And when I do, it's either lunchtime or it's time to go home. So, and with my hearing already being bad as it is, I wanted to find something that would go in and out real easy and would have real good, what's the right word? Not suction, you know. It'd keep it
a
in
good
there.
Closure, I guess.
Yeah, keep all the sound, as much sound out as possible. And then earlier in the week, I got out, I'd bought a little steel swinger target where there's like four round circles on the bottom. You shoot them and they flip up, and then you shoot the one at the top and they all fall back down.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a set of those. Those are fun.
Yeah, yeah, it was fun, but I realized how rough I am on my rifle shooting. Besides doing like 3-gun, you know, running and gunning with my AR, I really haven't been doing much rifle shooting, so it was rough.
Maybe you should hang out with Mary more often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could use the lessons.
I'll smoothen you out.
You know, one thing I noticed about those spinners with the reset, there's a little warning in the box that says 22 long rifle only. It's a good idea to read that warning because 17 and HMR really beats those spinners up. I had to bring mine home and rehammer them back into shape.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, twisted them up really good. And little teeny craters.
Yeah. Nope, I just shot with the 22 and all it did was take all the paint off, but that's fine. I figure, can of spray paint. That's the other thing. They come in black, and then they come with these little orange stickers, which seems dumb to me because, okay, so the black will blend in with your background, so you put this orange sticker on it, but when you hit the target, you're just going to destroy this orange sticker that's on it.
So well, why don't you put up a white drop sheet in behind it?
Because the point of using steel is making it easy to set up.
No, she's saying for visibility.
Yeah, for visibility.
Yeah, I don't know.
Things I do. If you're using open sights, I have orange spray paint that I use on mine.
Yeah.
And if I'm using a red dot, I put black spray paint on it. And it just the paint eventually all comes off anyway, right?
Yeah.
But I find a new shooter at 100 yards, put those in the berm, set them down at the bench. They can shoot them all day with my 10/22.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm just saying the little stickers just seem kind of useless.
They are because they come off after the first or second shot. They pop right off anyway.
Yeah, that's my point. So that's why I figured just an investment in a can of orange spray paint, that'll be good enough. But, yep. And then I also did the interview with Wes about what I did last week in Guns. Wes and I got off topic, and we talked for a long time. So we're going to throw that in later in the show.
Awesome.
Yeah. It was a good interview. Yeah. Well, because anything else, Mike?
No, that's all I did this week in Guns.
Okay, well, because Wes goes a little bit long, we've got Mira in the show, we're going to skip main topic tonight. And there's so many events. We're going to skip right into events, and then we'll do one what's new and then a comment this week. We'll try to cut it down because it's a really good interview, so we'll put it right after the event. So, Mike, what's event one this week?
Event one, there will be a long gun sight and day at the Port Perry Rod and Gun District – nope, just Rod Gun Club on Saturday, October 15th from 9 till noon. The cost is $30 per shooter with one gun plus $5 for each extra gun. You supply the ammo. PPRG is located at 2431 Highway 7A, Port Perry, Ontario, about half a kilometer east of Island Road on the north side. It can be difficult to see the range from the road, so keep your eye out for the street number.
And another good one we've got coming up, also on October 15th, unfortunately, but two different ends of the city. Dean from Select Shooting Supplies is having a range day at the Galt Sportsman Club on Saturday, October 15th from 10 o'clock to 4 p.m. No PAL required. He's going to have sales reps from Vortex and Smith & Wesson there with the full product lines, lots of firearms, optics, and accessory. And a last-minute add-in, Grand Power Distribution will also be attending with their full product line for you to try. So if you wanted to try one of their new 9s or the new 10mm, it's going to be there. And also, David's going to be there. He's offering full Grand Power armor services provided on site. If you want to Grand Power or have questions or need anything upgraded or fixed, bring it on to the event. Just please keep it encased until they're ready to look at it. And then, Mary, what's event three?
Event three, I don't have the full details of it, but I know the grand opening for Cabela's in Ottawa is September 22nd. Doors open at 9 a.m. It's 3065 Palladium Drive in Kanata, Ontario. So sorry for all you Kingston people. You can just, you know, take the drive. So this is the grand opening for everybody, first time at this location. They also have a ladies event October 1st. And this event, further dates are like further times to come.
Okay.
But like all ladies come out. Great time. We have a couple, like myself, I will be there, and so will a fellow shooter of mine, under 25, team captain to New Zealand in 2019.
Excellent.
And so we will be giving seminars, small little group discussions and stuff from 10 to 12:30 that day.
Sounds excellent.
From the morning to the afternoon, I'll just have to get exact times, but yeah.
Oh, cool. I didn't realize you're going to be there when you talked about it. You mentioned everything but you're going to be there.
Advertise and not show up.
Sorry, what day was that you're going to be there on?
October 1st.
October 1st, okay.
Do you have a time frame?
Well, it'll be the morning and the afternoon, but exact times are to come later.
Okay. And what's event three, Mike?
Barry Gun Club 5th Annual Ladies Day is on Sunday, October 2nd from 12 to 4. There's no experience necessary and no firearms licenses required. There's a $25 registration fee, with all proceeds going to the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation. For registration or more information, please contact Susan Rattel at susan.rattel, R-A-T-E-L-L-E, at barrygunclub.org.
Actually, I was speaking to Susan this week, and she's kind of disappointed. They didn't get the Cowboy Action Guys this year.
Oh,
yeah, she was really looking forward to it. But she's going to give us an updated poster.
You guys come in, you know, cowboy hat and all.
Well, the only problem is they're all old-timers, right?
Yeah, meet the retirees. They got all the time in the world.
Get some of them in on the wheelchairs. Get some of them in on the walking sticks. They're solid. Just dress them up a little bit.
They're all retired. What else do they got to do?
Exactly. They have so much time on their hands.
Well, it's getting even
one day.
It's getting even more fun. There's another event. Lance Shooting Supplies at the Silverdale Gun Club are hosting a pumpkin shoot fundraiser for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And this is going to be on Sunday, October 30th, at from 10 to 4 at Silverdale, is located at 4948 Concession Road 4, Grimsby, Ontario. There is a Facebook event page, and there's three nice draws that I know about. There might be more. I haven't gotten to update it. I'm just using the info from last week's show. But there's the bucket of booze that George wants. There's that new Canuck 1911 9mm that I want. And there's an AR in there that Mary might like. It's now that she's going to be 18 tomorrow and she'll be getting her pal soon.
Yeah. Now, if I can list just one sort of last event that kind of came up.
Okay.
So for all of you who are out there and who would like to try shooting competition, there's a small provincial competition going on throughout a series of 5 months, one weekend per month. You can pre-register, contact me personally at 613-363-3490 or marion_patrick@hotmail.com. And these competitions are called the Lakeshore Small Boar Association matches. Small provincial competition. They host air rifle, 22, air pistol, so a wide variety, hunting rifle. And the expected weekend for the first competition for the first month is the 12th to the 13th. It may change to the next weekend, and I will let you know as soon as I find out the actual dates.
Oh, excellent.
All of you guys looking for a competition setting, and yeah, if you're looking for a classification out in
The Lakeshore Association shoot?
It's in 5 or 6 different locations.
Okay.
There's one in Ottawa. There's one at the Pioneer Gun Club. I'm not sure where that is in relation to you guys. There's one right near Waterloo. There's one in Kitchener. I think there's one in London. And one in the middle of nowhere. I don't know where that middle of nowhere is.
Very descriptive.
It's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, sounds good. And Mike, what about that? Does that CFI silent auction?
Yep, the CFI have two Pieta revolvers, 1873 Colt single action reproductions, the matching holster, and a 10/22 rifle with a scope up for silent auction. The revolvers are chambered in .45 long Colt and do not have sequential serial numbers. The holster is made by Hollywood Holsters, reminiscent of the Lone Ranger gun rig, with a certificate of authenticity and owner's name. It has a 38-inch waist. The like-new Ruger 10/22 standard sporter rifle has a 18.5-inch barrel with a Bushnell 3-9 scope. Opening bid for the two Pietas and holster is $1,200. Opening bid for the 10/22 is $260. Bidding closes at 5 p.m. September 23rd, 2016. For additional information, please contact Jim at CanadianFirearmsInstitute.ca.
Excellent. Thanks, Mike. And for your local gun show information in each province, please visit the CSSA event page. The link is in the show notes below. And we're going to cut you loose for a second, and we're going to let Mike do his interview with Wes.
So tonight, I have Wes on. Wes was nice enough to invite me out to an IDPA match at his local club in Regina. Say hi, Wes.
Hello, everyone.
So you are in charge of your IDPA club, correct?
Yep, I am. Called the Regina Association of Practical Shooters. Started out as an IPSC club a long time ago. And we started shooting IDPA a few years back, and a few of us have decided we wanted to change how a couple things were happening at the club, so we got involved. They always say, you know, those that show up are the ones that make change, right? Or some reasonable something like that, right?
Something like that.
Something.
So how many people do you regularly get out to your matches?
Normal turnout for those matches is around 10, so we may have low as 6, 7, but sometimes we get out, you know, 12 to 15.
Okay.
In the nice months, so. We just run predominantly, like, level 1 matches. We haven't really done any kind of level 2s or 3s or anything, so.
Okay. And how often are you running a match?
We run a match in Regina the second Saturday of every month. So we've had one match a month since April this year.
Okay, do you run all winter?
We haven't in the past, but that might change this year because we just got a new indoor range opened up at the facility. So hopefully that'll change.
Okay, that's awesome. So where did you find your inspiration for your stages at this match?
I have made them in the past, but for this particular past match, I went on to Google SketchUp.
Okay.
It's a 3D drawing program on Google. And basically, you can type in whatever you want. You can type in IDPA stages, and it spit out a few. So I figure, let's give some of these a try.
Okay. And how did you end up liking the stages that you set up?
I thought some of them were fairly good.
Yeah.
I like stages with a lot of walls, a lot of cover thrown around, so, and a lot of movement. But yeah, I thought they turned out pretty well.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I thought they turned out great too.
You shot them. What was your favorite stage?
I have to say the last one was the let's just run all the stages in reverse order one after the other.
That's not exactly what it was. There's a little bit of difference, but yeah, like whenever you drag out all those props that do the moving and all that stuff with the activators, you kind of want to shoot those again, I find.
Yep. Oh yeah, no, I just really liked it. I know that wasn't exactly what it was, but it was it was fun. I like a lot of
when you have an IDPA match and they read the scenarios, and some of them are just out of this world. They're just hilarious.
Yeah. No, I like IDPA stages with a lot of movement.
Yeah.
You know, like some stages are pretty much you draw your pistol and you just stand in one spot and you shoot the four targets or whatever it is three times each and that's it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot when you get to, you know, do a little bit of running around.
Yeah, and a couple of our stages had their shooting from the table, which is kind of neat sometimes, but
yeah,
I do like the ones with the movement.
Oh yeah.
Like the one stage was pretty interesting. You had you know, you're at the table and you're selling a gun to a couple, and you have to shoot around them kind of thing. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun too. Yeah, because that was the one where you started sitting down and you had to get up and move across.
Yeah.
That was actually a pretty cool little stage because it had a little bit of everything in a very small package.
Well, and that's the trouble with I find like IDPA stages because of the limited ammunition that you carry.
Yeah.
You have to stick to that 18 round maximum.
Yeah.
For the revolver guys. So yeah, that one you shot from the table and then you got up and then there was one that kind of appeared on the move you had to take and then shooting around walls. But yeah. It was a pretty good one.
Yeah, it was. I liked it.
I would have liked to throw a swinger in there. I always like to throw a swinger or a drop turner in there and mess with people.
You like to make it a little more complicated?
I like to make stages so they're like just enough that you have to reload a semi-automatic. I had one friend, he said, yeah, I can shoot this stage with one magazine. I said, well, try it. And you got at the very end, you had to, as you're coming up to the cover, you shot an activator. And then you really had to lean out and around to shoot this drop turner. So right when he shot the activator, he went to slide lock and he turned to the drop turner and he was out of ammo. And that was a bad mistake.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's always nice when you have to do at least one reload, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah, especially when you can, you know, throw in some more reloads for the semi-auto guys.
Yeah, well,
being a revolver shooter.
yes, that too. But it's also, I don't know. I mean, sometimes you travel a very far distance to go to a match, and when you pull up to a stage and they're like, shoot this one target three times, and you're like, that's it, that's the whole stage, and like I drove 3 hours to put three rounds into one target. You know.
Yeah.
Like when you add a few more targets into that, right?
Yeah, it comes down to how much time the people have, right, to set up resources, right?
Oh yeah, that's always a big thing too. And like you said, every stage is limited just because of the IDPA rules, right?
Yeah.
So what did you shoot? Like, what was your equipment setup?
I have a Smith & Wesson Model 66, which is an all stainless steel K-frame.
Okay.
So it's it's lighter than a 686, but it's still 357 Magnum.
Okay.
And my holsters and speed loaders, or loader pouches, is all custom Kydex stuff. I have a friend that makes holsters, and they're really good for semi-auto, so I asked him if he'd try one for my revolver, and he did, and I thought it worked beautifully, so I've been running it ever since. Oh, and then I run Comp 3 speed loaders, so I really like the spring-loaded ones. So.
Okay. Have you done any modification to any of your gear?
No, I think I've changed my revolver grips from stock, those big rubber Hoke ones. So I changed them to VZ kind of slimmer ones.
Okay.
More trigger on, or finger on the trigger. But other than that, no, everything's as it comes. So. Yeah.
You didn't put in like a trigger kit or anything like that into your revolver?
No, it's still got that really heavy 12-pound trigger pull. It's one of the things that I really have to change.
Well, it's a matter. I think you did pretty good with it, just saying.
Oh, yeah, but can you imagine if I had a, trigger pull that was half the weight?
Oh, yeah.
I think I'd be rocking it. It's just like last year I was shooting all 357s. This year I'm shooting 38s, and there's a noticeable difference, especially when you do reloads, because the cases got stuck when I was shooting 357s. The ejector rod was just, long enough that the cases would come out, but they wouldn't spit out the last little bit. You'd have to pluck them out with your fingers.
Okay. So what made you make the switch from 357 to 38?
Well, I buy my ammo from a ammo reloader, I guess, remanufactured ammo.
Okay.
So the only reason I bought 357 is because I bought a case of 357 for less than what 38 was going for at my local Cabela's, so...
Oh, okay.
Because this reloader was at the time was out of 38, so I just said, well, just sell me the 357s. So, but I've since got a case of 38, so I'm pretty happy.
Well, that's good. Do you notice a difference in the flipperosity of the revolver?
The flipperosity is way down. Yeah, it was almost like getting smacked with a ruler at the back of your hand sometimes, because it's a smaller revolver to run the 357s in. I guess it's a lot lighter than a GP100 or even a 686. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because you have the half underlug.
Yeah, it's only got a half underlug, and it's not as big as a frame, right? It's a K-frame, so.
Oh, yeah. And your speed loaders, you just use them stock?
Yeah, I haven't cut them. I heard there is a modification for them, but I really haven't looked into it. The only complaint that I have about speed loaders is, like, our range is pretty sandy, so when you drop them, after a few matches, they just get gritty, so you really have to go in there and clean them out.
Clean them out, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of a modification. A gentleman at one of my clubs he's always bugging me to do it, and it's just to chop the end off a little bit, just it makes it so that once your rounds are released, like, they kind of slide out a little bit. It just shortens that space where they slide out. So they're kind of...
A little enhance of reliability, maybe?
Yeah, I think...
So they don't get stuck?
Well, I think it would enhance the odds of the rounds going in on the first shot. But I guess it would increase your odds of them falling out by accident. You know what I mean?
I've only had one problem, and that was with one that was really dirty.
Yeah.
I was trying my darndest to just push it in, but it wouldn't release into the cylinder, so I took it out and threw it, and as soon as it hit the ground, it boing, and it sprung rounds everywhere. But I had another one that I just threw it in. But that was a while ago, but it cost me 5 or 6 seconds to do that, right?
Oh, yeah, it cost
you. Which is a lot, like, you look at the leaderboard, and you're talking about fractions of a second to the next guy, so.
Oh, yeah. That's good that that's been your only problem, because I've had problems where they're grabbing on their way out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've had that. And I think it was really on just one speed loader, and I figured out which one it is, and I've taken it out of the rotation. And since I've done it, it hadn't happened. But yeah, sometimes when you go to eject them, they wouldn't completely leave the speed loader before you pulled the speed loader away. So the speed loader would actually pull them back out. So.
You know, I was wondering about that for a while. I've had a Glock and Glock mags for 6-7 years now, and the mags are still work awesome. But like after a couple of years of using these speed loaders, they're looking pretty beat up. I'm wondering if guys don't every couple of few years they have to buy all new speed loaders.
I haven't been into the revolver game long enough to. To really know well, what the...
This is just my second year, and mine are getting a little worse for wear, so I'm going to use them until they run, but we'll see. Like, I could see guys having to replace this. Like, the old PPC guys, they got bags of them. Like, I know a guy who's got, like, he shows up to the range, he's got, like, 50 speed loaders.
Yeah. In PPC, do you reload under time restraints?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, okay.
Like you'll have one stage it'll be, you have facings, they call them facings. And facings can be anywhere from 5 seconds to like two and a half minutes. So you'll get a, in your facing, you have to complete a certain task. So it'll be like, in 10 seconds, shoot 6 rounds on target kind of thing.
Yeah.
So in some of the facings, it's, I think the longest one is in a, 165 seconds, however many minutes that is. You have to shoot 6 sitting, 6 prone, 6 left hand around a barricade, and right hand around the barricade.
Oh,
so
wow. It's
24 rounds in 165 seconds at 50 yards with a revolver.
Oh, at 50 it's yards.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, and I tell you, the good guys, and put them all in the X-ring.
Wow.
Which is no bigger than like a deck of cards, like that.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I was thinking of looking into PPC just to practice my accuracy skills, but geez, that sounds like it's going to test my speed skills too.
It might a little, especially the first few stages are kind of quick and dirty, so they're really close, but they're really fast. One of them is one-handed too, so at 3 yards in like 3 seconds you gotta I don't think you have to draw, but you have to go from a low ready, shoot 3 in 3 seconds.
Okay.
And then there's one, it's you gotta shoot 3 switch hands and then another 3, and I think you only get like 4 or 5 seconds. But
oh wow,
it's you can shoot PPC, you don't have to have a revolver. A lot of our guys shoot with semi-autos too.
Okay. Either way, it just seems like it'd be good practice.
Oh, yeah. It's if you're looking at just putting rounds downrange, there's nothing better. Because one PPC match, it consists of 150, they call PPC, and 150 duty gun. You know, they run 2 matches at a time, or our club does.
Okay.
Like, you run 300 rounds in one PPC match here locally in a pretty short amount of time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So how did you do at this IDPA match?
I placed 3rd overall.
That's good. You're using revolver. How many other revolver shooters were there?
Just one. It
was you. And for the audience out there, did you beat him?
I did.
Yeah,
by a little bit, though.
You smoked me.
I'm not even lying. I didn't even see how many seconds, because I was comparing myself to the guy in front of me, and I think the guy that got first place, I was 10 or 15 seconds behind. I can't remember, but what were you behind?
I'm trying to pull it up right now. I think I was way behind you.
Well, you're trying to game it there. Some of them didn't work.
Yeah, I tried to game a couple of them. I mean, that's kind of...
That's
I like
the name of the game, right? It is a game, right?
Yeah, it is a game. And it's to me, sometimes that's half the fun, right? Is trying to think of... Like, you even said, I think before the second stage, you're sitting there and you're like, how can I game this? How can I do this better than everyone else? Right? And
yeah.
To me, that's half the fun, right? It's not necessarily to be a, ha ha ha, I'm doing, I'm sneaky and I'm better than you. It's more like a, I'm smarter. I came up with a better idea than you.
Well, I think it was the second stage where you start with your gun in the box.
Yeah.
And there was nothing in the stage description that said you couldn't have your slide open or cylinder open or whatever.
Yeah.
So fortunately, that box was tall enough that I could leave the gun in the box with the cylinder wide open and you just grab it and shoot it in the
order. Yeah.
People were, you can't do that. Well, let's see if this box closes. Oh, and it does.
Yeah. I know, and I'll admit it, I was ticked when I saw that. Not because you did it, but because I didn't think of it.
Well, that's part of the things, especially when you're starting a stage on a table, the gun's resting on a table or what have you.
Yeah.
Some people, without thinking, they just put their gun on the table. They don't think, well, can I angle it this way so when my hand's coming up to it, is it at the right angle? So that, you know, it's easy to grab.
Yeah.
You know, if you can save a second, it's worth it.
Yeah. Which is funny because I actually learned that from the cowboy shooters. When Sarah got into cowboy shooting, the way they always set up their guns is so that their trigger guard is just on the table so they don't accidentally stick their finger in it, but their grip is out so you can wrap your hand all the way around the gun before you even pull it off the table.
Yeah, that's smart, right?
Yeah. I pulled up the score. You beat me by over 41 seconds.
41 seconds?
Like I said, you...
What was that from the leader?
From the leader, that would have been about 54 seconds.
54 from me to the leader.
Or sorry, no, oh, from you to the leader, you're 13 seconds.
13, okay.
And I'm just looking at it, but you know what I can say? I can say I won the very first stage.
Well, there you go.
Yep, that's what I'm going off of.
You were one of the first ones where, you know, I think Eric was first on that stage. But
yeah, I was in the middle somewhere.
That was a nice, quick, and dirty stage, but it's good. Those ones I find are good to warm up.
Yeah.
I don't like to put a big, complicated stage as the first one.
Yeah. But, I mean, you still had 5 targets, so there was a decent number of targets. You had to shoot on the move, and you had to shoot while kneeling. So, I mean, it definitely wasn't a plain stage.
Well, it was... As far as the ones I set up, that one's about as simple as the ones I set up. I like to set up ones with a little bit of walls. I like to go crazy sometimes. Some guys hate me, especially when they have to tear it all down.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we move on to the 3-gun that we shot together in Verdun at the...
Oh man, I don't want to even remember this.
Fort Lebon. Oh, they didn't post up the scores, though. So, don't worry, I won't bring that part up.
I know, like, what's the deal with that? Like,
I mean, okay, well, how about this? We'll pretend like this...
At least we can't compare scores to that one.
We'll talk about the first 5 stages. How'd you like the first 5 stages?
Yeah, they're excellent stages. I thought a lot of steel, which is I like, because they're easy to reset. They're fun to shoot because the targets actually do something. They did have their paper targets, but I really, really enjoyed the steel. They used the steel, so that's something at my range we don't hardly ever do.
Yeah, same here. I rarely see any steel at all in Ontario, so seeing all that steel kind of made me drool a little.
Well, and in Ontario, like, you guys have to shroud them all, right?
Yeah, and that's just it, because it's a pain to shroud, and because it can't be permanent. I mean, not that stuff there was permanent, but it just made it such a pain in the butt that people just don't want to be bothered with it when it comes to setting up for a match, right?
Well, yeah, because it effectively doubles the amount of, like, because now you got to store all that shrouding too, right?
Oh, yeah, and you know, as I'm sure you know from, like, any club, you got to lock it up, otherwise some idiot's going to shoot it with their 50 BMG and put a hole right through it.
Yep. Well, we had that problem this year. We got 2 plate racks on our range, and when people sign up for our range, I send them, you know, the introductory email, and it says those 2 plate racks at the back are pistol only. And there is, you know what, got a new guy this year, promptly shot them up with the AR.
Yeah.
Didn't take very long at all, but oh well.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah,
I
so that was
to go and weld those up and grind them off, but.
Yeah. But those were, it was good because it wasn't just all the same steel either. We had the hanging steel that was the A-zone. I assume that's what it was supposed to be.
Yeah, it's, it looks like a hanging A zone off the IPSC Classic target.
Yeah.
I think I heard them refer to them as bowling pins once.
Oh, yeah?
Like the bottom of a bowling pin. But...
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
They did have actual bowling pins too, though, which is also fun to shoot, right?
Yeah, the wooden bowling pin.
Yeah, something very different.
They don't, you're kind of not sure when you hit them, right? Like, I was noticing when I was shooting them, the bullet passes through, and it almost takes them a second to realize that they're shot and wobble over and fall over.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I found that when I was shooting them with the rifle, I got to the point where I was just putting a shot on and moving to the next one. And it seemed like 50, sometimes I hit it, sometimes I didn't, right?
Yeah.
But it took long enough that I could transition to the next bowling pin, you know, to make it worth my time. But, yeah, they had that. They had the rectangular plates for with the rifles. They had poppers for the pistol and the shotgun. And they had those little square plates they kept calling B-zone targets, which they used also with the shotguns.
Yep.
Which were just fun little targets just to shoot with the shotgun.
Did you get any shot back?
I got none. None at all.
I got one pellet back.
Oh, yeah? But my father-in-law, who was there for two stages, and he got ricochet come back at him. He was quite surprised by that.
He had his safety glasses, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He had his safety glasses and ear protection on. So what were you using? We'll go through your rifle first. What rifle did you use?
I have a custom build that I put together this year. Basically, it started as a strict NEA lower. Colt Canada came out with the IUR uppers, and then I just filled it with a bunch of fancy parts, BCM furniture, Geissele trigger, AAC muzzle brake, and then for this particular match was my first one, my first match and my second time ever using this Vortex Strike Eagle. So I think that was half of my problem. I was setting the scope up at 6 power, and the maximum distance was 50 yards. It's way too much. It's like, limit your field of view.
Yeah. What that scope, what was the range? Like, what was the range? 1 to 6?
Yeah, it's a 1 to 6. But it's a, I love the reticle, and the glasses is clear enough.
Yeah.
The 1 power, I find, is pretty close to a 1 power, so when you're doing the close things. But I just, I've come from an ACOG where it's just a fixed power. So
okay.
I'm not used to having to change any kind of magnification. So that'll be a learning curve.
Oh, yeah.
That's an operator error.
And you said you had a Geissele trigger. Do you know which one you have?
That particular one is the Super Dynamic Combat trigger.
Okay.
So it's not the Super GoFest one, like the 3-gun one. It's more of a duty style trigger with a fancy trigger shoe.
Okay.
I like flat triggers for some reason, but it sure is crisp. Like, it's 4.5 pounds, and it's got a really nice break.
Yeah, it does. You let me try pulling the trigger on that, and that is one really nice trigger.
I just installed a buddy's Super Dynamic 3-gun last night at my place, and that trigger almost pulls itself. As soon as it resets, it's almost like your trigger finger falls backward and it goes off again. It's just, I dry fired it in my basement here, and I was just like, holy moly.
Well, that's awesome. So what about your pistol? What pistol did you run?
I have a pretty close stock Glock 17. The only thing that I've done to it, really major upgrades to it, are worn tactical sights and a grip plug and a extended slide release, which I am now taking off because this particular extended slide release is interferes with the way I grip the pistol. I ride up on the frame too high.
Okay.
So I basically push up on the slide release and it locks the slide back. So I was having trouble some of the stages. It was like having a single shot pistol. Bang, hit the slide release. Bang, hit the slide release. So, no matter how hard I tried to shift my grip, it was not working. So, that's going back to stock.
All right. And how about your shotgun? What shotgun were you running?
I have a Remington Versamax that's all tricked out by Casey, a Tactical Ordnance.
Okay.
It's like hands down the best semi-automatic shotgun
that you can buy for a 3-gun, I think.
Yeah, that is a pretty nice gun, and it's almost like the old Western gun, right? Where it said, what is the saying, you load it on Sunday and you shoot all week?
Yeah, the Henry.
Yeah.
Load on Sunday and shoot all week. It's nice having that, it's 7 in the tube, plus 1 in the chamber, plus 1 ghost loaded, so 9 rounds.
Yeah, I was with my little pump gun. I admit I was quite jealous when multiple times there would be a stage where you wouldn't even need to reload once. And I'd be sitting there struggling with my shell, trying to shove them into my Mossberg 500s, right?
Yeah.
That was good. And how did that run for you?
Not one hiccup that I can remember. There was a couple times that I ghost loaded it in the past, and that it kind of, the shell kind of stopped on the, I don't know what you call it, the feed ramp or the chamber. It just kind of had a misfeed. But I think it's working itself in pretty well.
Okay.
No issues that I noticed.
That's good. And what's give us a general idea of what your belt setup is like.
I have a Safariland ELS rig. So basically, it is a modular belt system that you put these little receivers on. They're kind of a universal receiver for Safariland mag pouches and stuff. So you can put them anywhere you want. If you need more pistol mags than rifle mags for a stage, you can take off rifle mag pouches, put more pistol mag pouches, and vice versa. So it's nice.
Yeah. You like that setup?
I love it. I've been a big fan of Safariland gear since I started shooting. When I started shooting, I shot PPC, and all these ex-police officers, they, you know, oh, you got to buy this Safariland holster and the Safariland belt. And the gear's always been just top quality.
Yeah.
Good enough for our boys in blue. It's good enough for me.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yep. Do we want to talk about that dreaded stage 6?
Sure, let's talk about it. You're going to have to face your demons one day or another, right?
Yeah. So essentially this was a walk in the woods with your shotgun. And there were clay set up on nails in trees all along this pathway. It was probably 30 yards long, would you say?
Yeah, 30, 40 yards maybe.
It's almost like, imagine you're partridge hunting. You're walking through the woods, you see the clay, you blast it with your shotgun, right? And that's pretty much it. You got to get from one end to the other. You had, I think, you had 30 shells, but there were only 25 targets, so you got penalized if you took extra shots. And I was loading from a bag what'd you call that, like, bandolier thing that you lent me?
That was the TACOM 16-up rig. So basically it's 16 shells in a 8 dual load configuration.
Yeah. And that was awesome. Thank you again for lending me that. So I went through that. And
I hope it worked well. Did you enjoy
it? Yeah, it did. I think I did it in just over 100 seconds. And I think at that point in time, you were smoking me.
Yeah, I had a couple bad stages to begin with, and then it caught up and I was finding my groove, right?
Yeah.
But then the dread stage 6 happened. So I'm not a hunter. I've never been a big hunter. That's kind of what this stage was supposed to mock. So I'm going through the woods. I can't even see these bright orange clays. So I'm walking past them. And the guy's going, to your right, to your right, to your right. And I'm like, where? I can't see. And, like, little did I know, oh, it's like three rows of trees back. I'm like, I'm not even looking close to where these things are. So instead of taking the time to back up and shoot all these targets, I should have just left them. I should have just walked past them. You beat me handily by about 80 seconds in that one stage, which cost me my whole day, that one.
Yeah, and I don't think you had really any other bad stages. I thought you did good all around, like all day long.
The first two, I could have been a little quicker. Like stage 2, I forgot my shock shell loaders, so that was another brain fart. But I could have done way better on that one had I not forgotten those.
Yeah.
And the first stage was kind of a
kind of a, like I said, I had my scope set too high, so I was shooting the pins and then having trouble finding the next one.
Okay.
And another thing was the scope wobble was quite significant at 6 power. So like to concentrate and shoot those little A-zone targets was a little challenging. So for the rest of the stages, I dialed it down to about 2 or 3 power and I did a lot better.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I still thought you did good on the first 2 stages. I mean, obviously, you missed the ones you didn't bring shells for, but I think you did it fast. And one thing I was really impressed with, because I don't think I would have been able to do it, when you realized you didn't have the shells, you just moved on. Like it would almost like when I was watching you, it almost seemed seamless that you were just like screw it and ran ahead.
Well, yeah, you reach down and there's nothing there, and you go, well, they're not going to let me shoot it over, so I might as well scrub those ones.
No, I was just impressed by your reaction time and your determination just to move on, because I could tell you, I probably would have stood there for a minute going, what should I do? Should I just pick up these rocks and throw them at the steel and hope they go down?
Well, I wonder if those Wolverine guys are pretty crazy. I'm wondering if a couple of them wouldn't have bayonet charged them.
Just butt stroke the steel. yeah.
But you get to do that. I don't know if you have, but that's not the first time I've made big errors like that. And you have to learn, like, when you're shooting a stage on the fly like that, you got to just roll with it. You got to make the best out of the situation that you've created.
Yeah.
So.
And I think because you did have that instant reaction just to move on, that it actually did save your time.
Yeah, because I was still only a couple seconds, even with 3 misses, and the misses were 10 seconds apiece. I wasn't far off from, well, you, Eric, and I were kind of like the top shooters in the squad there. So I wasn't far out from you guys.
No, you weren't. You were like it would by no means where you were left in the dust or anything like that, right? Your day wasn't determined by that. You clearly could have, and I think you did really bring it back.
Yeah. Well, the next stage, I think you shot an 80 some.
Yeah.
Stage, which was the fastest.
Yeah, I think Eric had the fastest time at like 100 seconds, and then I shot it in like 80, and they thought that the clock was broken.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, oh, it's not broken. See, I'll do it in 60 seconds. Like,
yeah. 66. So then the guy turns around. Now we know this timer's broken.
Yeah.
I thought he was being serious. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to reshoot it.
That was my first thought, too, when he said that he thought it was broken. I'm like, oh, man, I got to go reshoot this. Like, yeah, it's fun reshooting, but, you know, every time I reshoot a stage, I always mess it up worse than I did the first time.
I find that, too. Well, I think Terry found that out at our IDPA match, too. I think he got a reshoot, and he plugged the no-shoot about 3 times.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, they didn't really release the overall scores, did they?
No, they didn't.
All I know is that I missed 3rd place by, I think, less than 2 seconds.
Yeah, by a friggin' hair.
I know, that was... And, you know, the only reason why I'm mad about it is because that's got to be the closest I've ever been to, like, winning, like, a 3-gun match like that.
Yeah.
That's why I'm sad that I didn't, like, do a little bit better. You know?
Well, and I would have liked to see, I wonder what the scores would have been like, because they kind of changed right at the scoring time there, what the penalties would be for missing. So I wonder if that just kind of kicked us just out of there.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I did, I think I had 1 miss. So that would have added, I have no idea what the other guy's misses were like, but
yeah.
If he had, I don't know, if he had none and his score was the exact same, then I would have actually beaten him by like 2 seconds, but.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, you know, I came close, and that's the closest I've probably ever been, so I'd happy with that.
That's good, and I'm, you know, it's bittersweet, right? Because my buddy Eric, he's got a bad wheel, so like a bad leg, so he's always kind of been middle of the pack kind of shooter, so I was kind of actually glad that he wasted me, so he had something to brag about the whole way home. I had to listen to. No, I was a slow poke. So.
But that
get used to it. I'm coming back with a vengeance.
Yeah, well, I mean, for a big guy, he really showed that you don't have to be fast to be good.
Yeah.
Because I mean, that very first stage, like I know I struggled with that very first shot on steel. But I mean, besides that, I felt like most things were clicking for me, and he still beat me by, I think, 10 seconds, and I ran. Like,
yeah.
when there was a chance to move, I ran as fast as my little legs would carry me, and he just kind of, you know, Sunday strolled, walked through it, and, you know, his accuracy was just...
his legs felt ready to fall off if he ran anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, but yet he still beat me because he was so much. His shots were on target every time, so
yeah,
he didn't have
only
to take
had one miss or something on that first stage. It was pretty good.
Yeah, so I mean, he obviously saved a lot of time by not sucking like I was.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I've always told people in the club. You see guys that come out to the club and they got a new gun every time, every match, and they go, this is going to be the match where, you know, like I blow everyone out of the water because I got this new firearm. And it comes down to knowing your equipment, which was, like I said, is the second time ever shooting with this particular scope on my rifle.
Yeah.
I think a lot of guys are like, so you're going to get rid of the Strike Eagle, you know, like, you know, you don't think it's that great and everything. I go, no, I think I'm just going to put some more time with it. Because I got about 2,000 rounds or more through my AR with just an ACOG on it. And I've only got, you know, 200 maybe with the Strike Eagle. So.
Yeah. Considering 100 of those rounds were probably at the three-gun match you just shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, it's... You can't buy your way to first place.
People say, like, when I shoot my Glock and pistol competitions, before I had trouble with my slide release, you know, they go, man, you're quick with that thing. I go, well, that's because it's the only 9mm I own, and for 5 years, it was my only pistol that I owned. So I used to do a PPC match once a week practice, so it was like 150 rounds a week, you know, week in, week out for 5 years.
Yeah. Well, any other final thoughts on the other two matches? Any words of inspiration for people?
No, just I'll be looking forward to redeeming myself at the upcoming matches. I got Ipswich and Hampton, Saskatoon, and then there's a 2M and a 3-gun the weekend after. We'll hope we can get out of this rut. It's not really
that rough, but. Well, I'll see you at the CQM match, and until then, take care.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
No problem. Have a good night.
You too.
And we're back. Thank you, Wes, and thank you, Mike. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to take Mike shooting. He doesn't get much shooting these days. And I also want to personally thank Wes and Kareem for driving all the way from Manitoba to the charity shoot this summer. So thanks, guys. Appreciate it. What's new in the industry? Well, there's more 10mm goodness happening. But a little history first. Before the age of instant information and Mary's computer skills, if you want to learn about guns and ammo, you actually had to buy and read magazines and books. Yes, you actually had to read. You either had to go to the store and buy it, or you had to go to the library. Anyway, one of my favorite writers of all time was Colonel Jeff Cooper. He was a master of the English language, and he was always to the point. His pistol skills and training methods helped develop the modern pistol training that we use today. And although the colonel's his main passion and respect was for the 1911 is legendary, he also always wanted a semi-auto pistol that he could hunt with. So,
So
you're working on the show notes again, Mike, as I'm talking.
No, I'm not. I'm just scrolling down. I'm not deleting. I'm not adding. I'm just scrolling. Okay.
The old guy gets upset. You know, if he doesn't follow his spot, he falls apart.
Hey, just wing it. Just wing it. That's what I'm doing. You don't need no show notes.
The colonel then played a prominent role in developing and designing the Darnus and Dixon Bren 10 10mm pistols. Soon after the 10mm introduction, it was selected for service by the FBI. The cartridge was later decommissioned after their firearms training unit eventually concluded that its recoil was excessive in terms of training for average agents and that the pistols chambered for the cartridge were too large for some individuals. But some FBI units still use the 10mm. However, the FBI did like the terminal performance of the 10mm cartridge, so they approached Smith & Wesson. This led to the creation of the following replacement to a shorter version of the 10mm that exists today, the 40 Smith & Wesson.
Now, the 10mm is still alive and kicking back. I've fired two in the past. I fired a Colt Delta, I think it was called, and it was okay. It was nice. I got to shoot Tom Stix's 10 Foglio Witness down at the Appleseed, Michigan a couple years ago, and it was sweet. It was a nice shooting gun, nice heavy platform, so, and it was a tack driver. I really liked that one. But now, Grand Power has a 10mm on the market. The manufacturer's literature says that this rotating barrel makes shooting the powerful 10mm round as tame as a 9mm. That remains to be seen. While rotating barrel does have a different recoil impulse, it's more of a push resulting less muzzle flip than a tilt barrel design. But recoil is subjective, and the same amount of energy is still being released in any blowback design, whether the barrel tilts or rotates. And this gun is only has a 4 1/4 inch barrel and only weighs 27 ounces, so it's going to be peppy. So stay tuned. Grand Power has offered us the use of the GP40 for test and evaluation. Unfortunately, Dave from Grand Power Distribution is sick this weekend, so I wasn't able to go shooting with him, so we'll have to reschedule. Or I could just wait until the 15th and go down to the Select Shooting Supply range day that they're having at the Gulf that we just talked about. And since they're offering armor services at the shoot, I'm going to take my Grand Powers with me. Not that my Grand Powers really need any work. Both the K22 and the X-Cal have nice factory triggers. I should buy some recoil springs and roll pins while I'm there. Maybe an extra fiber optic pin for the front sight.
It's always a good idea to have some spare parts for your gun in your range bag. And having a trained factory armor look at your gun for free is a win-win. They are experts on that particular platform, and they will see something that your local gunsmith might.
Might not.
You write the whole script out, and you leave the very last word.
I leave the very last word.
Wow. That kind of was very anticlimactic.
Well, the advantage is there might, because it's a rotating barrel system, a lot of guys might not be familiar with it. The armorer might see wear patterns, or he might see something that a regular gunsmith not used to that platform might miss. So, and for free, it's a great idea. Any listener email, Mike?
Nope. We still have that one from Thomas that George has that's, unfortunately, since George isn't here, we weren't able to get it from him.
You know, his excuse, surgery,
slacker.
I know. Mary had almost 20, had 20 nuggets, and she's still here.
I know.
So we have no iTunes, Facebook likes, 899 as of 5 p.m. today, so we're getting close to 1,000. Closing comments. This I want to touch with, and Mary can put her little CSSA thing at the end. I received a personal message from a friend who's an admin on a large gun group Facebook page. After I posted New Shooter Canada episode to that page, I'm not going to say who sent this to me or what page it was on, but I'll just share what was said. It just says, just for your information, anything promoting the CFF, CFRC, F, whatever it's called, will be deleted off. Hope you understand. You know, in this political climate, we need more voices. We need action, and we need to be heard. Nobody else seems to be willing to step up and do it, so the CCFR gets our support and our gratitude.
The CSSA, CFI, and the CCFR all need our support. Join one, or better yet, join them all. They work for us in different ways, and we need them all. Better yet, get involved, get active, and volunteer some of your time to help out.
And Mary, what was that newsletter you were telling us about for the CSSA?
Yes, if you join the CSSA, they're a national organization, so for all the competitive target shooters out there, they end up helping out with a lot of the competitions. And so if you become a member of the CSSA, you end up getting a newsletter every month. And this newsletter, I can't remember the name of it offhand, but you get a lot of deals out of this newsletter. Great deals and things that are on sale, and some things you think you might not need for your rifle, or you do need for your rifle, are included in the magazine. There's also often some coaching tips that are shown in the magazine, so watch out for those.
Now, plus you get the Caliber magazine as well, too, right?
Yes, that's
what you're referring to.
Yeah. Wow, Thomas.
It's a great mag. Well, they used to send out a newsletter. So I wasn't sure. Maybe they had a separate program for the shooting teams. I don't know. But Caliber magazine is an excellent magazine, and it's Canadian.
Yeah, it's a wonderful magazine, especially like if you're looking for a specific product or something. And I've seen a lot of good quality scopes.
The thing I like too, it's a Canadian magazine, and it's any prices are quoted or Canadian dollars.
Yeah, they're not American, so you don't have to do a whole bunch of math. Because after 20 nuggets, you're not going to want to do a whole bunch of math.
No, you're going to be either going to the washroom or laying down, one of the two.
Not there yet. It's not as bad as alcohol.
We won't talk about alcohol. So, Mary, any shout-outs?
Shout-out to everybody for all of the support they have given to the shooting community. That's just the general shout-out, the general thank you I have as a co-host, I guess. Yeah.
Well, give Scott a shout-out, because he's got a new doesn't he have a new blog or a new news feed going in where you guys live?
Oh, yes, he does. So shout-out to my stepdad, Scott Gardner. He's starting it's sort of like a media profile. It's called the Cornwall Pulse, and it's basically to bring a whole bunch of news out to show everybody what Cornwall's really all about. So he's got a whole bunch of different sections. So there's one part where it's the history of Cornwall, different things that have happened. He's always got like the weather posted of the day, what events are going on. So it's really great. Check it out. Make sure to like, share his page. Give him a shout out as well, because he's put so much work into it these past few months. And I think he's done a really great job with it.
Excellent. And he's a great hockey shooting dad, too.
Oh, definitely. He supports me even if he doesn't know what I'm talking about.
Mike, any shout-outs?
Just to everyone at the IDPA match today. It was great meeting everyone, and it's always interesting to meet new people, and it's especially interesting when they're people from a different province, so they have a whole separate, different set of rules and different atmosphere in general. So it's great meeting everyone today.
Excellent. I was going through some of our messages, and we had a message from listener Roy from Belgium a few months ago. And I don't remember if I gave him a shout out or not. I'm looking at it going, did I say hi to him? I should have. He actually messaged the show. So Roy in Belgium, thanks for listening. Mary, happy birthday.
Thank you.
You can legally drink in Quebec now, right?
In 2 hours I can.
Okay, everybody, thank you for listening. Have a good night. Take your kids shooting. Mike?
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
Do you have a classic ending, Mary?
Perfect shots every time.
Excellent. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good night.
Good morning.
Good morning, good night. Happy birthday.
Well, I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.